Welcome to the Craft Pier Radio.
Craft Pier Radio.
Is that, pier is like the beers are piers, or is that like a fishing pier?
You're the one that invented it. You have to come up with the
craft
concept,
pier
too.
Pier Radio. Okay, so by the end of the pre-show, we'll have a whole new podcast concept fleshed out, but I don't have anything right now.
Is that it? Is that all you had?
Well, on that topic.
It's been a really busy week for me. I've been... Excuse me, I've been very, just busy. I've been working hard, and,
I've been dealing with the tax man.
Yay! Oh, we'll talk, I mean, yeah, we'll go to your, yeah. Tell us about the tax man.
Tax man. So, got a nastygram saying that I owe them, like, $5,000.
Was it really a nastygram, or was it the fact that they said they owed you, that you owed $5,000 was the nasty part?
That was the nasty part,
It didn't say, hey, asshole.
Well, it did have, you know, interest and penalties, so it's kind of nasty that, you know, I mean, that's what they do, but still, that you just like, motherfuckers. And then it would have been okay.
That's like saying a bill is a nasty.
some other people that had left my previous company, you know, and had stock options and stuff, have had similar things happen where they miscalculate they were counting the income twice. Because it's actually W-2, you know, taxes income.
Right.
But then, you know, so the value was there, but they added the actual sale, you know, the value to the income. So I, you know, I got all the letters from my former employer. And it would have been okay. And I started looking through the stuff and realized that Heather really screwed up when she entered my stock option sales and stuff like that. Wrong values in wrong fields. Not even consistently, you know, just bad news. So
maybe now you should take a look at those tax returns now that you see that there's been a problem.
Yeah, maybe. So instead of, you know, having $8,000 in income on taxes, she had calculated that we had lost $25,000 on investment income. You know, had net losses or capital losses or whatever of $25,000. There's a maximum.
What did she use? Did she just do it by hand?
It was TurboTax.
She just didn't understand the options.
Didn't understand the values for the fields. There's a maximum deduction from Greenhorn's beer.
He's doing his thing. He's like,
it's cheat day. Time's running out. We need to get the beer going. There was a maximum capital gains loss of $3,000 or something that you can deduct.
Uh-huh.
And so I hit that deduction, and since all my income was actually taxed as income, you know, all the gains that I made was actually taxed as income, turns out there was only a $3,000 discrepancy, not a $12,000, even though they still might be confused about another $20,000 or something like that. So, I mean, it turns out I did short the government about $450, so
okay.
We sent them that. We'll see if there's got to be penalties and interest and all that crap still. Basically, we sent back the thing saying, I disagree with all these charges, but I agree with some of the charges. Here's $450. Here's my amended tax return. I'm sure there's going to be a couple more back and forths before it's all sorted out. But it's a lot better than the $5,000. That
yes, $450 is better than $5,000. It's an iPad versus... A lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them. Or, you know, a modest portion of a car, you know. It sure would have been nice if we didn't have that mess up. Because you know, actually that year, I overpaid on taxes and we ended up getting a refund of like $6,000.
Oh.
So it would have been nice to not have screwed that up and avoided this whole penalty situation thing and whatnot. But...
I'll just look this way. You got a tax-free loan from the government. Or an interest-free loan from the government.
After I gave them an interest-free loan of $6,000 for
a
year.
Right. but they paid you back pretty quickly, and then this $450 was...
Well, I don't know if it's going to be interest-free. Right? They're probably going to hit me back with, okay, even if they agree with the new...
Yeah, that's true.
If they agree with my amended return, they're probably going to say, oh, by the way, you owe me for this penalty and this interest. Hopefully the penalty is a percentage of of, you know, failed to pay wages, because the penalty that they suggested on the big thing was the penalty portion was $700 in itself. It would sure suck if it's like a flat rate penalty and I had to pay $700 when I only...
I'm pretty sure it's progressive, so I don't think...
Yeah, hopefully. So that was a stressful large portion of my week. You know, Greg's like, yeah, you think you can get the show up? I'm like, no, I need to get my head around these taxes and stock options and stuff. And, you know, in the end, I got my head around it, and I'm not stressed anymore. Like I said, I might have to pay some interest.
Yeah. So I was just busy just doing work. I have a vacation coming up next week. This time I will be in Boston. So I'm just trying to get everything squared away before... I'm only actually taking like 3 days off of work because I don't actually get vacation days being a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we're doing it, so I'm flying up Friday night and then I'm coming back on Wednesday. Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, so I was busy this week and we'll be busy probably for the rest of this coming week.
Do you have any plans, or are you just going to spend time with the family?
I'm a wing it kind of guy. Okay. I don't like going to a place with a prescribed plan of where I want to go. Now, if you ask, like, my mother is all like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so they plan. They sometimes plan their...
Your mom and dad going to be there?
No.
Oh, okay.
They plan their vacations out to the second sometimes, and I am not like that. I don't even plan to go to any place special. You know, maybe I'll have one thing in mind or two things in mind, but that's not... Mm-hmm. It's all negotiable. So. And the interesting thing is I need to probably go up there, and that first night I probably have to buy some groceries so I can keep my diet in their house with the food they have.
Oh, yeah. But she did be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I can cook a good meal with the stuff, but I have to, you know... I have to make sure they have enough beans and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, fish. The fish should be very nice there. So.
Is there I know you don't want to do it now because, you know, you're just getting into your diet still. But is there a provision for vacations, like, where you don't have to be strictly on your diet?
There's a cheat day. That's your provision. Day.
Okay. I was curious if, because, you know, you talked about the whole almanac stuff. I was wondering, like, if there was a, you know, if you go on vacation and want to... You know, do a foodie vacation. You know, was there like, here's how you can prep for...
Well, there's plenty of ways that you can, like, for example, I found a Mexican restaurant near where I work, and I can go there and order a meal in such a way that I get a meal that's good, but doesn't have anything bad in it. So I've been going there and I get this fajita platter, and I say, no cheese, no sour cream, no tortillas, and no rice. And so I get beans, and I get a little bit of lettuce, a little bit of some salsa, some guacamole is fine, and the peppers and onions and whatever, beef or chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That's a diet food.
That's a fine... That's a... Yeah. Fine lunch, too.
It's a fine lunch. I usually split that in two, you know, and take it home and have the rest of it for dinner. So it's a fine lunch, and that is diet food on this diet, and that you can do pretty much anywhere. Like I said, mm-hmm. Bars are the place where that's trouble, where everything is fried and covered in bread.
Mm-hmm.
But any place where you can make some sort of substitution or cut things out, you can find a way to make it work. It's not a problem.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're really into it. You wouldn't want to stray from it, you know, now. I was just curious if there was, like, a chapter on you can... prep for your vacation by doing X and then recover from your vacation by doing Y, but nothing like that. Okay.
Nope. Then really there's no reason to. You have a cheat day, make use of that cheat day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the next day after cheat day, you're not going to want anything special anyway, and probably for the next 2 days. And then after that, save it for the next cheat day. It's not that hard.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I wanted to talk about, first of all, I've been having a lot of fun with Siri, actually. I've been surprised at how...
Good fun?
Productive, yeah, I've been surprised at how useful Siri itself, in terms of asking questions and things like that, is silly to a point. But text, voice-based text entry is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And that Siri sort of allows it to be done anywhere. So just for, you know, telling messages to somebody or for what I want to search for or stuff like that, it's a lot quicker. And I even, like, on my way up here, I said, you know, remind me to do this. Mm-hmm. Remind me to talk about this. So it was very easy to get reminders and things in there.
Right.
I find the voice-based text entry turns out to be very useful. It's great now that I can read and write text without having to actually look at my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I hated texting while driving, but some people just are insistent that I get back to them when they know I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now I can, without being a terrible danger to everybody.
Yeah, correcting, well, you're, like, doing Siri and correcting errors while you're driving stuff, right? So normally I'll let it go with some kind of silly error and just append with, I dictated this through Siri, you know?
I try to talk slowly, mm-hmm. and try to keep it short and simple.
Mm-hmm.
And not arguing philosophy with Siri.
Siri seems, I don't know how much of its algorithm learns the individual, it learns me, but it seems like after some time, she really dialed in and started getting good. And, you know, I don't know if she knows that I talk about tech things, but, like, I was using acronyms, you know, that could sound like anything, and she put them in, she got the capitalization right, you know, things like that. I was really impressed when I started doing stuff like that.
Well,
like I said, T1PRI, you know, it nailed it, you know, it's a telephone, you know, circuit, you know, so.
I mean, my guess is that, you know, Siri is centrally located. It communicates to servers all the time. My guess mm-hmm. is that a lot of tech people are probably using it, and it sees the things and you know, like, has an algorithm that says, okay, people are using T1. That means it's this. That means they like this more than they like this. And so it just keeps going. It's the Apple Maps problem, but, you know, Apple got a head start as opposed to other companies. So.
Right. Speaking of maps, last time we talked about maps, I was pretty, you know,
supportive
of it, and using it more. You know, I don't think it's crap. I did see how inaccurate so many of their pins are. Like every place I looked at around, you know, the places I was looking where I knew where the businesses were, the accuracy was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like to the point where, if I was doing this in another city, or if a stranger was doing it in that area, they would have serious problems finding these stores, like, because they were not within sight of the place.
Yeah. They seem to do better with residential directions than with businesses.
Okay.
And maybe that's because the turnover for businesses is more. But even businesses that have been there for a long time, and government things, like, gets the Washington Monument wrong. It gets weird things wrong.
I could see how, like, you know, if you're in a strip mall, how it might not know exactly where you are. But, I mean, that's part of the thing that's so good about Google Maps is it has Street View, but it also has the pins in the right places, you know? And I started, like, correcting a few things on Apple Maps. I'm like, wait, why? I'm not getting paid for this shit.
That's what they want. They want you to correct things because group-wise, that will build Apple Maps.
It will. They need to make it less tedious. Well, they need to have a Maps app for desktop, so you can...
I don't buy into the idea, oh, I'm not getting paid for this, why should I do it? The whole point is that it's crowdsourcing, and if you do it and everybody does it, it works best for everyone. It's like, you're not getting paid to vote, but the point is not that you're getting paid for it.
Having accurate maps from Apple and getting paid in voting. I see the correlation. No, I did some, but it was getting, like, there were so many taps involved with resetting a pin.
And that needs to be fixed.
It was only putting it in for review, so who knows when it'll get reviewed, if it'll get updated, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, screw this.
All right, well. Everyone's loss.
I'm not spending all my copious amounts of free time fixing Apple Maps.
So I wanted to bring up we've been talking about philosophy a couple times here, and... Mm-hmm. You may ask, why am I quote unquote arguing with Jeff when Jeff's probably going to agree with everything I say. And part of it is that I'm trying to shore up some of my arguments and trying to throw them out. And I sort of came up with a new answer to a certain type of argument. So what I'm thinking here is this is about the presuppositionalist argument. Now, there are a whole bunch of these different arguments for existence of God. There's the cosmological argument. That's the one. There was everything began with the everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore it has a cause. Therefore, that cause is God. That's the cosmological. There's a bunch of reasons why that's wrong. One of them is that it's taking pop psi and turning into into literal stuff. So science disproves the cosmological argument. There is the ontological argument. This is argument from pure reason. It's silly because we don't hold Platonic ideas anymore. We don't hold the idea that there is some sort of there is, like, for example, in the Platonic world, there is an absolute table that either exists or abstractly exists. This is a table, and every other table is just a representation of that absolute fundamental table.
Okay, I guess I don't know anything
It's a silly argument, but these whole Platonic things, you know, they came around before we had better epistemology like science, and I approach things from a materialistic naturalism point of view. So that's it's pretty simply, you know, reason and experimentalism, and shows us reality or shared reality. And the argument that's coming up is this presuppositional one, which is sort of a version of a teleological argument, which is an argument from fine tuning roughly. And it's sort of an ontological argument. It's kind of a combination of both of them. And the whole idea here is that because science and reason and all that stuff has been able to easily get around all these arguments, they take science and reason and make that the argument. So the argument is such that the only reason why we have science and reason and logic is because a God exists. Otherwise, it would be reality would not exist without a God. So they're sort of just removing the step from it.
Okay.
And so how do you answer that? This runs up against the hard solipsism problem, which is, am I in the matrix? Is there a way to tell whether I'm in the matrix or not? And as far as I'm concerned, I've answered this as no, there is not a way to tell, but it doesn't matter.
Right. I think the it doesn't matter, or yeah, the it doesn't matter part. I mean, that's kind of an underpinning of what I've come to, you know, as my philosophy and my belief system, right? You know, am I in the Matrix? You know, before the Matrix came out, it's like, am I an ant farm for some huge bigger being, right? You know, I mean, you know, all this kind of thought. And then really, you know, other than curiosity, if there's no scientific way to examine, to put it to the test, does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
How can it matter? You know, if it doesn't play part in your reality, does it matter? It's almost like, you know, we've talked, you know, agnostic, atheist, whatnot, you know, like another part of my belief system is there may or may not be a supreme being who created the laws of the universe and like kicked off the Big Bang and just has observed since, right? And at that point, does it matter, right? Because it's outside your realm of reality.
If it does not interact with reality,
right.
In any
right.
way,
if he's not pulling strings,
then there's then it's as if it's not there, and it can be considered an equivalent property. If something does not interact with, or is not there, are exactly equivalent in this case.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, let's go over that one more time, just even to help me, right? You know, and maybe have just have me say it. But, yeah, I mean, if there's just the Supreme Being who is observing and not pulling strings, what is the functional difference of him being there and not being there?
Right.
Now,
This is the Occam's razor argument. This is that you have... remove superfluous elements. And Occam's razor, it should be pointed out, is a general principle. It's not an actual, it's not like a theory or it's not something that's there. It's a generalized principle that usually helps you figure something out, but it isn't always the case. But in this case, in the case where you have two exactly, here's a way to Occam's razor this. You have 3 × 3 = 6. 3 × 3 × 1 = 6. So you have
three times three equals six.
Three times three equals nine.
Okay, I just wanted to see if that was part of your example or.
Sorry. 3 × 3 = 9. This is. Yeah. When I'm on philosophy, my math brain shuts off. 3 × 3 = 9. 3 × 3 × 1 = 9. Right? Mm-hmm. So you look at those and you say they equal the same. They're the same thing. 3 × 3 and 3 × 3 = 1. You can get rid of the times one. It's superfluous. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't affect the thing in any way. This is the universe. This is the universe with God. They're equal to the exact same thing. You can get rid of the God part because the God part doesn't change anything with the universe. If the universe is exactly the same with God and without God, then the God explanation is meaningless to explain the universe.
Sure. I'm looking back more at the math example than the philosophical God part of the example. Because I'm trying to, like, construct a word problem, you know, where the math is 3 × 3 × 1. And I don't think it makes it irrelevant. You know, there's probably something there that, you know, makes it relevant. You know, otherwise, why would it ever be there in the first place? You know, think of the word problem. You know, Jeff has 3 apples.
Right.
You know, he is offered, you know, 3 apples 3 times. And then he is offered, times the one time. I mean, anyone who knows basic multiplication knows that just gets canceled out. You know, you know, there's still in the construction of the word problem, in the instance of the transaction that's happening in reality, there's a times one somehow, right? So saying that it might as well not be there.
I'm just looking at the problem from an abstract point of view. You're trying to picture the actual problem, and this is getting way out of the bounds of what I want. But that's okay. Okay, so if you wanted to turn it into a word problem,
you just want me to nod here, like when you're talking about stuff I don't understand.
No,
and say, uh-huh.
No, I agree.
Actually, got something here.
I agree with you that's an interesting question, and so how would you approach that from a word problem perspective? Well,
but you know, I don't have a great example of wording a times one that would be essential. You know, that would actually come up in a common occurrence. You know, in a
Okay, here's where I think the times one you could say the time one is. You have three apples in your hand. I give you another 3 apples. Now you have 9 apples. Those are in your hand. Now you put them on the table. You multiplied by one, put them on the table. So you changed where they were. How many apples do you have? You still have 9, but they were once in your hand. Well, now they're on your table.
Okay, no, actually, here's a word problem that uses a times one, where it makes sense. I don't have the 3 × 3 part worked out, but imagine there are 2 people in the room. Each of them has 3 apples. One person leaves the room. How many apples are? And then be 3 × 1, right?
Okay,
so there's a times one type word problem.
Okay, all right, so there are...
Now, the other dimension of the 3 × 3, not really important, but yeah. I mean, there's putting the times one into a word problem where it does matter, right? So, but it's a subtraction of the right, you know, the operator, or not the operator, but the one number, the one scalar.
So this is, This is a good question, and it's one that I'll have to think about. But let me continue on my other way. And
so I prove that there's God.
you gave me an interesting avenue into this argument, and to see if I can define it in a word problem way, that would be even more, mm-hmm. even better for my
argument. I mean, so, something to just work because on. Mathematical operations cancel out doesn't mean that they're superfluous.
Right, but there is, you know, an argument you could make that doesn't involve necessarily math is...
Okay. I mean, if we try to tie it back in, I'm just picking on one part that I can competently speak about, you know, that I have an opinion that I have in my head, you know, how that reflects back to the other one. I'm not saying that, you know, because I'm absolutely not saying that if you can't see something, it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you can't detect, test, observe something, that it matters. If it's not interacting, if it's not observable.
And so my point ultimately is to get down to the question of what do the presuppositions, and this is what I need to ask a presuppositionalist, what do they mean when they say that reality is created by, what is their definition of reality? Because I can give a definition of reality that eliminates their argument. And that definition is reality is the shared experience between us that is demonstrably true to all of us. So there are things within our own minds that are subjective, how we perceive certain things, our feelings towards certain things. There are things that are demonstrably objective for all of us, the wavelength of certain types of light, the electric dipole movement of an atom. These sort of things, the things that we can measure, how long this is, those things that we can definitely measure, how long this is in this reference frame. These things that we can definitely measure, so the shared things that we all can agree on using demonstrable evidence, that is the only definition of reality that is necessary. And then to say that this reality needs to be created by other things doesn't hold water, because it is already defined as the shared thing and what we all agree on. So you're saying what a schizophrenic may have a completely different idea of reality than we do. Yes, but we don't agree on the same things. But there's probably, he and I can probably both agree that this is my arm.
Depends how
schizophrenic. Depends how crazy he is, but we can get certain links. So there's these links, and that's what builds up the reality. And that's what reality is. Reality is a model that we build up together socially. Everything is, and that's the objective reality, because we can confirm it with other people. And then there's a subjective reality that's a component of that we all build up in our own heads. But we're not arguing about that. We're arguing about the subjective one. We're arguing about the objective one, the one that we can demonstrably show is true to us and to other people. It doesn't avoid the hard solipsism problem. It doesn't avoid the problem of, but neither does theirs. Neither does the presuppositionalist problem.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about, though. Explain.
The hard solipsism is, again, why are you in the matrix? Okay. Are you in the matrix or not? And defining reality in this way doesn't avoid that. But saying that the only reason why reality is this way is because a God exists doesn't avoid the hard solipsism question either.
Yep. I mean... Yeah, I mean, we're still back, you know, I feel like we're beating a dead horse, kind of, where, I mean, I see how you're working on combat, you know, just certain aspects of it, you know, for the people that are closer to me, where, you know, it's much more of a lay thing,
yeah.
You know, we're really sounding like we're beating a dead horse.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of going into some of the, because I've watched things and I've sort of been immersed in this, so I'm talking in that language, I'm using those terms. And that's probably not the best way to do it. So I apologize to everybody. But there's, I'm trying to work it out in my head, and I hope that maybe Jeff and maybe you guys could give me some pointers if I'm on. And Jeff already gave me a great idea, which is to try to expand the mathematical argument, the mathematical Occam's razor argument, into a word problem that has the same parameters, so it's very easy to see. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that, and I'll work.
Sure thing.
It.
Sure thing. Watched a keynote speech. There was a configuration management tool that I use called Puppet. It's an open source configuration manager. They just had their conference, and one of the keynote speakers was one of the IT guys from CERN, you know, in Switzerland.
Right.
And they were talking a little bit about their data rates and, you know, and for the experiments and whatnot, and the size of their data center and their compute labs and things like that. It was very, very cool, because they actually, you know, tied like some of the science into, you know, like how the IT resources, you know, capture that science and whatnot. Like, you know, like the LHC collector is on the order, I believe he said 100 megapixel camera, which doesn't sound too daunting. You know, it's big. It's a lot bigger than your 10 megapixel camera. But
does it take like multiple billion?
68,000 images a second.
Yeah. So you're building on billions over the course of a minute or two.
He was talking about, they're talking about the data rates that the thing captures. And it's like each detector, like raw data, is like a petabyte an hour.
Yeah.
And they can't store that much data. What they get down to is what they're actually ingesting into the storage systems is 25 gigabytes a second.
Yeah, it goes through several filters. It goes through a filter to see if there's a programmatic filter to see whether this is interesting or not, based on these parameters. And it goes through a second filter to see whether it's interesting.
They have like 73 petabytes of data.
And so it goes through these two filters to see whether it's interesting, and then if that's interesting, then it goes into that data that gets stored per second. Now, they also, I believe, they share, they do spit some directly through, tagging it with how it would have looked to both ones, so they can make sure that the sensors are mm-hmm. working correctly. Right. So they have some data that would have got filtered, but they still keep to make sure those filters are doing the job they're supposed to do.
They have 68,000 wasn't the right number for the number of frames per second. Maybe it was like 40,000 frames per second, because they have in their data center, they have 68,000 hard drives. And they have around on the order of 2,000 hard drives fail a year. That's a lot of hard drive changing.
So 68,000 hard drives, I can see why 2,000 would.
That's like 10 times the industry's mean time to failure.
Yeah.
They think it has to do with like vibration and how it's racked and stuff like that.
I bet.
I guess Google and Amazon also see a similar failure rate that's above industry mean time to failure.
That sounds, yeah. If you're writing that much constantly.
Yeah. It was fascinating. I was watching just to see, and just the numbers, you know, they're going to have 300,000 virtual machine, you know, a farm that can do 300,000 virtual machines, and they need to manage deployment of this stuff, and that's where Puppet and other things come in. But, you know, when they started, you know, he started out with like, you know, talking about the LHC and some of the other, you know, experiments that are going on there and all the data. And how they have to, it's just like, wow, it was impressive. It was a great talk of science and the IT infrastructure behind it. It was really neat.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And they're actually doubling their data center. They're building another one in Budapest next year.
In somewhat similar things, The Onion is coming out with a parody of TED. They're going to do The Onion Talks. So that should be fun to watch.
I haven't watched any, you know, I've seen like one or two TEDs. I've watched a couple of the Google Tech Talks.
TEDs were like, you know, it was fun at first, but they got to be the same basic idea over and over again. People would clap. People would either promise that they would solve the world's problems in 20 minutes or talk about some nonsense in 20 minutes. There were some that were good, but most of them were just people blustering. Mm-hmm. And it got pretty silly pretty fast.
I see. Yeah, so what do you got next? What's next on your plate?
Okay, actually, I kind of want to save these two for the post show. Nobel Prizes were given out.
All of them or just a few?
At least some of them.
I only heard like about two or three categories, I thought.
There was in the medicine prize was something to do with cloning and cells and
yeah. I couldn't quite follow what it was about. I just listened to Science Friday.
Yeah.
And they were talking to the one guy or someone familiar with the one guy. I was playing with the kids, so I didn't ingest everything they were talking about. But even then, I still didn't really follow it.
Had something to do with figuring out that cells can be reprogrammed to turn back into stem cells.
Okay.
So
the LED is 50 years old.
Yes, the LED, the pure light engine, as they called it in science, as the guy called it in Science Friday, the perfect engine, in that aside from resistance and other things like that, aside from heat loss is going to be in the system, all the rest of the energy goes directly to light, as opposed to your light bulb, the old light bulbs at least, the incandescent ones, which basically were lighting make something really hot and using the after effects of that to make light.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely evolved, you know, in our adulthood. You know, 15 years ago, you know, there was only red LEDs, more or less.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, we've gone a long way in our adulthood, you know, and they're so commonplace now. You don't even think about them. I remember when I was, you know,
a teenager. Well, we had LED screens.
Right. I remember when I was a teenager, you know, that they were still, maybe just because they were novel to me, but they were still not ubiquitous, you know, notification, you know, like, oh, there's a light on a device. It's an LED. No, there's still lots of light bulbs in you know, the late 80s, early 90s, you know.
I don't know if there are many light bulbs still on devices. Because the thing about the LEDs were, they didn't go out, and so they were, like, for power indicators and things like that, they always use LEDs on, like, your VCR and your TV and whatever, so, and your monitors. Your computers had LEDs all over them. I don't know whether it's the case. I mean, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, sure, they had bulbs, but once they got into the 80s and 90s and they started to have digital calculators and things like that, they figured out that they could throw an LED or two on there and it wouldn't be that. I mean, like the Nintendo, ever had an LED for the power button. Yeah. These things all.
I suppose you're right, but I mean, I remember cracking open, you know, electronics from that era, you know, mid '80s, and you know, there's, you know, LEDs weren't nearly as ubiquitous as they are now. But that's a faulty memory of mine.
Maybe.
And look LCDs. You know, look at crystal displays. Like go in the front of VCRs. Different, really. It's not really the same technology. I remember when I was modding Xboxes, you know, like blue LEDs were like brand new, you know, now they're like the guy said on Science Friday, I guess yellow is still kind of hard to get a good pure yellow, you know, there's green and orange, which are kind of like on both sides of it, but getting a great yellow, they don't really have the right alloys, I guess, to give off those, that wavelength of light.
I still don't fully understand how it works, but I can only learn so much at one time. you know, I was trying to also learn about taxonomy and the new way in which we do taxonomy, and there's so many different new things to learn. I mean, it's not the family species. It's not like that anymore. Now we're talking about clades, and we're talking about different things like that.
Oh, so really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Because things are just getting too fuzzy with the old way, or
yeah, the old way. It turns out didn't do a that's the best way to put it. It ended up confusing more things. And conflating things that shouldn't be conflated. And now that we have better ideas through genetics and things like that, we can properly show things in a good way. And then we can order them in a better way to show what are the more likely common ancestors, where this come from.
Right, I mean, because the old way was just common traits, right?
Yeah.
Hey, it looks like this.
Yeah.
You know, or this behaves like this. So they must be similar, where, you know, there are, you know, parallel evolution that comes up with the same answer, you know, there's lots of that. So having, you know, the the actual genetics, the DNA, to figure out where the branches actually took place.
Like, for example, there are some legless lizards that are not snakes, but they may look similar, but they're not. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even on a much more simplistic thing, dolphins versus fish, you know.
But, I mean, well, we knew that.
Well, we did know that, sure. But, you know, you think far enough back, you know, before it was obvious that dolphins were mammals, you know, some ancient person just thought it was a fish.
Well, I mean, like, when I was learning genetics, I believe, you know, when I first started to learn them by the time I was in high school, it was a little bit different. But when I was in elementary school, we learned that there were plants, and there were animals, and there were fungus. They're just about that time thinking it was a third. Now I know bacteria is completely different from all of those, and there may be a different subset. There's a fifth one. So there's a bunch of...
You're talking about kingdoms or something else?
Yeah, talking about the basic kingdoms of life. There's, I think there are five now. There's cyanobacteria and there's other types of bacteria.
Well, that's still... I mean,
no,
I,
it's not.
Oh, it's different. Oh, you know what? You're right. I thought that was under the kingdom, though. I thought... Or one of them was still stuck in the plants. I remember that from school. But
I know they're not...
You know, animals, plants, fungus, bacteria, and viruses, I thought.
So, what we have now is we have the prokaryotes, which are your bacteria, and you have your eukaryotes, which have protista, plants, fungus, and animals. So there are five.
So there's something about... Oh, okay. But there's actually a thing above kingdom now. Prokaryotes and the eukaryotes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. There's life, and then they're combining the prokaryotes and eukaryotes. And then there's a monera is the prokaryotes. And what are those exactly? Well, it has to do with, eukaryotes have nucleuses and prokaryotes don't. So prokaryotes are bacteria and blue-green algae. And protista is sort of like single-celled eukaryotes. The amoeba, for example, is not considered so much an animal anymore as it is a single-celled eukaryote, a protista.
No. Okay. I say we wrap this up and drink some beer.
All righty.
I have to play some Missile Command here.